Blog Talk Radio.
Been running through me like you got somewhere to be. You're stuck in a full-time daydream. Always in a rush, I know you're busy for lunch. Taking pictures of your coffee.
Yes, we do. We all go running around and around and around. And now we're going to stop running around for a while, sit back and relax, and listen and enjoy the moment. Yes, this is our official band that provides all the music for Tippy Talk. He's Newborn. If you have not heard of them yet, you will, because they're on the brink of exploding into a world-renowned band. And if you want to hear more of the music, you can go to newbornband.com and enjoy the wonderful sounds. And now it's time to step into the Sippy Zone, where we explore the other side of reality, the side that allows you to reshape your life, to step into your power, and to connect to the fact that we are all one. Welcome to Tippy Talk. My name is Tippy Feldenstein, and I am dedicated to explore a life that is lived with clarity, confidence, control, and awareness. Tippy Talk is where you go from where you are to where you want to be. Hello, everybody. This is Tippy Feldenstein, and welcome to Tippy Talk. Tonight, we are going to explore something amazing, something that I have not heard before. And yes, it's called Schindler's Gift. You have not heard it wrong. You might be used to hearing Schindler's List, but that's a whole different story. And then we'll tell you about the connection. But yes, we're going to talk about Schindler's Gift. Schindler's Gift is really something that Kevin Roberts has been exploring for a very long time. Kevin Roberts is the author of the book called Schindler's List, which is really exciting because it gives you an insight into who Schindler was. And if you have not seen Schindler's List, I would suggest you go out and see it right now so that you know what we're talking about. Or the better choice yet is go and read the book Schindler's Gift, and you're going to hear about that really, really soon. So let me tell you a little bit about Kevin Roberts. Kevin Roberts spent a good time of his adult life coming to terms with his own ADHD and cyber addiction. And we'll talk about the cyber addiction too. He happens to be very educated. He has a master's degree in ADHD and addiction studies from a really well-known university. He has trained therapists and students and physicians and nurses and teachers and parents and school administrators on all the perils of overuse of internet and video games and ADHD. So I'd like to welcome Kevin Roberts to Tippy Talk. Welcome, Kevin. How are you?
I'm doing great, and I'm very privileged to be here, and thank you, Tippy, for helping me spread the message on this incredible topic. I'm really excited.
Oh, my God. Yeah, it's amazing. I would not think of anything but spreading it. It's an amazing message, and I think it's going to help. Actually, I think it is helping so many people, and really that's what Tippy Talk is all about, to help people in any way that we can. So really, I'm very grateful. Thank you so much for doing this.
Well, it's my pleasure, my absolute pleasure.
So I know it's also personal for you because obviously you suffered from ADHD. What was it like for you?
Well, you know, when I was growing up, I was always a talker. I had a hard time keeping my mouth shut. My mind was always rolling. I was a hyperactive kid, and now I'm a hyperactive adult. And school was grueling for me. And one of the things that actually it took me to adulthood before I figured it out, but I lived very close to the school, and it was a small Catholic school. And at that time, you could go home for lunch. So I knew that I could make it from whatever it was, 8:15 until 11:20. So I would watch the clock, and my mother taught me to talk to myself, you know, talk to myself, so you can do it. You know, just 103 more minutes. That's how I learned how to do math, was figuring out exactly how many minutes were left before I could go home. And then I would run home at full hyperactive ADHD speed. And I would get to spend 40 to 45 minutes at home on most days, eating a grilled cheese sandwich and tomato soup. That was my favorite lunch as a kid. But I got that downtime. I got to get away from school. And then I could go back, and I was renewed, and I would run back, and I got a lot of energy out. And, you know, I got some space and some solitude. Then I could go back and from 12 to whatever it was, 228. It was something like that, some odd number. And I could make it. So school was grueling. It was boring. It was painfully boring. It was painfully monotonous. But luckily, I had some factors, including my family, that helped me get through. So I didn't even know I was ADHD, because my brother was so far. My brother doesn't have ADHD. My older brother has way ADHD. It's a scientific term to describe those who are really, really ADHD. And he was so ADHD that the rest of us kind of looked normal. So it wasn't until I taught school, and I actually taught at a school called the Roper School, that was started by people who had to flee the Nazis in the 1930s in Germany, incidentally. And one of the school psychologists, I was talking to her one day, and I said, you know, it's kind of weird that they put all these kids with ADHD seem to make their way to me, and they seem to gravitate toward me in this school. She says, well, that's natural. You're ADHD yourself. And I said, no, I'm not. And so she gave me a battery of psychometric testing, and lo and behold, I was ADHD. So it took me till, you know, I was in my mid-20s to figure that out.
Wow. That's yeah. Amazing. So really what it sounds like to me is that the medicine that you used in school was called running. Yeah, you ran home, and that kind of relieved a little bit of the pressure. And then running back, would you say that that's maybe a good treatment for ADHD?
Well, I certainly think that there is a whole body of scientific evidence that says that recess and physical activity during the school day are incredibly important for all children, but especially for children with ADHD. And of course, there was a whole series of articles written a few years back about how punishing it was for schools who took away recess from ADHD children, because it was actually that physical activity that allowed them to kind of endure through classroom experiences that were often painful. No, I was not on medication. My brother was. But back in those days, Tippy, you had to be really extreme to get put on the stimulant medications. You know, that was something that only the most incorrigible of children were put on. But, you know, part of the reason that was the case is because back in those days, schools had a lot more flexibility and latitude about how they could deal with students. And I think that, you know, with the focus on standardized testing, there's been a certain rigidity that has taken hold in the education system. And I think it's harder to be an ADHD student nowadays than it used to be.
Really? But it would seem like it would be easier because they can diagnose it earlier, they can treat it, they also have medication for it, which they didn't have. How does that factor into being harder?
Well, you make an excellent point, and I can't disagree with you. But what I to be more specific, I think some functional factors in the way that in the school experience and how those have changed make it more necessary to have interventions to help students with ADHD than it was in the old days. I think there were a lot of people who weren't quite as extreme like me who could get by in the old days. But I think nowadays, if I were in school now with the vast amount of busy work, with the focus on standardized testing, with what I judge to be sort of an intolerance of differences, I think it would be much, much harder for me nowadays to be in school. And I think, you know, probably to get through, I would probably have to be medicated nowadays. But I think that the school, I think that the school system has changed. I think there was a lot more. Now that being said, I mean, it's kind of a gray area, because on the other hand, if you were sort of extreme like my brother, the scorn and the shame that was heaped upon him, I think, was much more severe in the old days than it is now. I think people now understand that a lot of what we would call behavioral disruptions to the classroom environment, these are things that are driven by differences in the brain of people who have ADHD. And, you know, like my brother, I mean, he was just such a highly kinesthetic and hyperactive individual, psychomotor overactive, that he just could not endure. I mean, I was able, you know, at least able to endure, but he couldn't. And I don't think that was about any character flaw in him. I think that was just about the way he was built and hardwired as a human being.
Do you think he was some kind of a chemical imbalance?
Well, I think it was brain has a severe form. You know, he's afflicted with a very severe form of ADHD, characterized by extreme impulsivity, the inability to control his impulses. And what we know from science is that one particular brain structure, the caudate nucleus, and there's two of them, one on each side, that brain structure correlates highly with our ability to control our impulses. And we know that a high percentage of boys with ADHD, for just with boys in this particular scientific area, have differences in the way that their caudate nucleus is structured, and there's a size difference between the left and right hemispheres with the caudate nucleus. And so I think that my brother, you know, if we examined his brain, I would have a strong suspicion that he has irregularities, irregular size and shape of that caudate nucleus that we know is so intrinsically involved with our ability to control impulses.
Now, I don't want to sound stupid, but I don't know what caudate nucleus is.
Well, I wrote a song about it, and I'm not going to sing it for you. But if you're bored in class and it's time to wait, you shout out and make the teacher irate. Must be that caudate. Hey, 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 that's a little song I wrote about the caudate nucleus. No, nobody's heard about the caudate. Nobody's heard about it. It's not something that we talk about. But what we know from scientific studies is that in people with no history of impulse control, no history of impulsivity, when those people have a traumatic brain injury that injures the caudate nucleus, that damages in some way the caudate nucleus, we know that those people are likely to begin exhibiting impulsivity and have behavioral control issues, simply because the part of the brain that is intimately involved in our ability to control impulses was damaged. So that the reason I bring that up is, gosh, I don't want to get too technical, but with ADHD, impulsivity, our ability to control our impulses, to sit quietly, to stop talking, these things are often impaired. And part of that impairment can be traced to this caudate nucleus area, which if you look at brain scans of ADHD boys, you can see that it's very different structurally than it is in the non-ADHD individual. So it's not
I'm so glad you said that, because I really was beginning to feel stupid. So do you mind telling us where the caudate nucleus? You see, you learn something new every day, just when I thought I knew everything.
Put your finger on the top of your head, the foramen, I guess it's called, and move it a couple inches forward, and then go about, take two fingers, your index and your ring finger, and put them about an inch on each side, of the middle line of the skull, and that's where they sit, and they're down in there a little bit. I guess probably about an inch or something like that. They sit in, they're part of this brain that we call the frontal brain. And that's where our higher functioning and ability to control impulses resides.
Oh, okay. That makes sense. Now I understand. See, I just learned something completely new and exciting. So thank you so much.
Well,
I really appreciate that.
Well, it's my pleasure. And, you know, one of the reasons I bring the caudate nucleus up is because so many people chalk up ADHD, bad character. You just didn't get disciplined, young man. And, you know, we have all these armchair psychological notions. I want to go to the brain. I want to figure out what's different in the brain. And that's the thing that I want to discuss with people, because most people don't understand that this condition goes down to the way the brain is constructed.
Right, exactly. So I also kind of question the validity of taking a little boy that's 4, maybe 5 or 6 years old, and expecting him, even a kid that's totally normal, and expecting him to really not talk for an entire day. Some kids are in school from 8 o'clock in the morning till 2 o'clock in the afternoon, and limiting the recess time. And I don't think that's a normal or a fair expectation for a child anyway, even without ADHD. Do you?
No, I certainly don't. And, you know, in Finland, they don't begin teaching reading and getting to the hard skills of school, the hard skills of academics, until the kids are a minimum of 7 years of age. They think in that country, which has recently racked up some very impressive educational statistics and accomplishments, they think that the important thing for children younger than the age of 7 is to play, to have freedom, to have the ability to explore, to have the ability to indulge curiosity. And personally, I believe that they're onto something. And I think that in such a system, children with ADHD might do a lot better if they had those early years to kind of indulge their curiosity, to have a certain freedom of their impulses and to learn what they wanted to learn. So, I certainly agree with you. And I certainly have some very serious disagreements with the way our educational system is structured.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't want to go into the educational system, because I can talk to you about that for 3 hours too. I really want to focus on what you did, and I really want to ask you one more thing before we find out more about Oscar, because that's fascinating all by itself. So you say that ADHD is a gift. Can you explain that to us and kind of let us know why it's a gift and how it is, and you know what is it? Yeah, you tell me.
Well. You know, first of all, you know, we have to be careful when we say things like ADHD is a gift, because, you know, it is a condition of differences and atypical functioning in the size, shape, structure, and workings of the brain. You know, there are discernible differences in the brain. But what we find is that a lot of ADHD people have gifts that they often don't get to fully explore because they're so caught up in, you know, fulfilling expectations in things that they might not be particularly suited to. But that we find that underneath all that stuff, underneath all the lack of school success, there are often gifts. And so, you know, if I look at myself, you know, I am a highly energetic person. I mean, I am extraordinarily energetic. I'm spontaneous. I'm creative. I'm imaginative. And if you take each of those traits that most – I'm fun. If you take each of those traits that we could sort of, I think, agree are positive, and if we increase them – in intensity, we would easily arrive at negative traits. So if we have spontaneity, that easily can become impulsive, which can get me into trouble. If we have creativity, which means, you know, sort of running my mind in the direction that it wants to go to come up with new things, well, that can easily turn into difficulty focusing on the things in my life that I need to do, like doing my taxes and balancing my checkbook and all that kind of stuff that I really avoid much more than the average person. So I think that a lot of the negatives with ADHD, if we learn how to live in the world and how to compensate for some of the weaknesses. A lot of them can turn into strengths, but gosh, in order for that to happen, we need a lot of support. We need a lot of encouragement. We need a lot of teaching and mentoring, because when you have a brain that's ADHD, it's a brain that is not the normal run-of-the-mill type of brain. And, you know, so many people, you know, go through their whole childhood and they get to their adult life and they've never had any instruction or any mentoring or any coaching on the way their brains work. And a lot of them end up, you know, thinking that they're stupid. A lot of them end up thinking that they don't have any talents. And so people with ADHD notoriously underperform. Given their underlying talents, given their underlying IQ, ADHD people will underperform when compared to people of similar abilities and potential that don't have ADHD. So when we say it's a gift, what we mean is that there are aspects of it that when properly honed and properly harnessed can lead to some wonderful world-changing actions. So that's what I mean by that. But boy, it's very difficult to say just categorically that it's a gift, because it certainly has a fair amount of liabilities that without proper education, instruction, mentoring, coaching, will tend to lead to underperformance and an overall lack of success for the individual.
So a friend of mine told me that a kid in her family, a five or six-year-old in her family, was diagnosed with ADHD, and he was given medication, and I'm really bad with medical drugs, so I don't remember the name of it. I know it wasn't Ritalin. I kind of worry about a six-year-old being on meds from such a young age. What would you suggest for somebody like that?
Well, it would be very difficult for me to weigh in on that in absolute terms, because I don't have the child in front of me. But I will tell you this, that one of the greatest side effects of an ADHD diagnosis is the damage that gets done to self-esteem. When you're the kid who gets the finger pointed at him in class, when you're the kid who, when everybody else is following directions, you're lost and you have to ask the teacher to repeat the directions. When you're the kid that comes to school and doesn't have his or her homework ready because you didn't remember that you had it, or you left your school bag at home, or it got crunched up in the bottom of your school bag, over time, these things take a toll, and these children will begin to feel bad about themselves. And when that takes root, when we have the early damage to self-esteem, this is something that can last the lifelong. Now, I'll tell you, two-thirds of people who are diagnosed with ADHD when they're children, those symptoms will significantly improve, and brain development will catch up in about two-thirds of them. But even in those that experience significant improvement in ADHD symptoms, this damage to self-esteem persists, and it continues to exact a heavy toll throughout life. And it's a very difficult thing to treat, especially since it's rooted in those early years. So one of the reasons that I do think medication can be a wonderful thing is because it allows that person to comply with expectations, to comply with instructions, and though to feel better about him or herself as a student. And how we perform as a student is part and parcel to a large extent when we're kids as to how we feel about ourselves. So from that perspective, I think it's a really good thing. But what the research says is that medication alone is not the best thing. Medication along with mentoring, coaching, instruction for the parents. You know, there's a group called CHAD that does parent-to-parent coaching. And these are wonderful kinds of programs where the parents are coached and mentored into how to coach and mentor their children to live and thrive with their ADHD nature. So that's what I would say about that. And that's a great segue into our friend Oscar Schindler, because a lot of people ask me if I think he should have been medicated.
Actually, you kind of read my mind, because I was kind of, as you were saying that, I was thinking, what is it that even made you suspect that how did Oscar Schindler come into your life, and what made you suspect that he had ADHD?
Well, when I watched that movie the first time, I found it electrifying. Actually, in my body, I had like tingles up my spine. I mean, that's how strongly I resonated with that
Wow.
movie. And it got about halfway in, Pippi, And I saw a scene that as soon as I saw it, because I didn't watch it at the movie theater. I watched it at home by myself, which is how I like to watch movies. And I came to a scene and I watched it and I stopped it. And I rewound it several times. It was a while ago, so you still rewound, you know. I watched it again and again and again, maybe 10 times, maybe 12 times, a lot. And this was the scene. The Ben Kingsley character playing Yitzhak Stern says he's responding to Oscar Schindler's request that Yitzhak Stern gets him Jewish investors to invest in his factory. And, you know, somewhat flummoxed by this idea, Yitzhak Stern says, "Mr. Schindler, let me understand. They put up all the money. I do all the work. What if you don't mind my asking, would you do?" And Oscar Schindler says, "I'd make it known the company was in business. I'd see that it had a certain panache. That's what I'm good at, not the work, not the work. The presentation." And I saw that scene, and I watched it again and again because something in that scene made me suspect that he had ADHD. You know, because that's a lot of ADHDers are like that. You know, we're good at the presentation. We're good at, you know, making a big splash, promoting. But boy, when it comes to handling those details and those everyday routines of a business, we often fall short. And so it was after that scene that I thought I was, you know, maybe I was just, you know, like me as an ADHD individual, maybe I thought maybe I was just trying to aggrandize ADHD, you know, by thinking that Oscar Schindler had ADHD. But my curiosity was so piqued that I began to do research, and I got a book by David Crow, who wrote an 800-page, very thorough history on Oscar Schindler, and I got a book by Robin O'Neill, and I read articles, and there's this Dr. Erica Rosenberg, who was great friends with Emily Schindler, and in fact is Emily Schindler's heir, and I read a book that she did about, you know, where she interviewed Emily Schindler, and the more I got into the details, the stronger, because I expected, you know, my research to dissuade me from the premise that Oscar Schindler had ADHD. But the more I got into the details, the more overwhelmingly convinced I became. So a couple of the things that, you know, really stand out: he hated school. He was a talker in school. He got in trouble in school a lot. He cheated in school. He got kicked out of school for cheating on a major exam when he was 16. He liked to fix things. He liked to use his hands. He was often spotted around town with a spanner. He carried this spanner tool around. He would have an oily rag hanging out of his pockets because he loved to work with mechanical things. Oscar Schindler, like a lot of ADHD impulsive people, was a risk taker. He raced motorcycles. He raced cars. And he also had very little patience for details. And his wife called him habitually inattentive. And that is a direct quote from Emily Schindler. This is what happened. So I had this suspicion, and then I went about and I did some research. And the case is absolutely overwhelming.
I really, really was touched by the movie also. But it sounds more like you became obsessed with the movie, and it might have been something that I just talked to someone yesterday that said that before you're born, you make a commitment to do certain things, and maybe this is one of the things that you made a commitment to do, is really look at ADHD from a different perspective of this is the characteristics. And a lot of people that have ADHD are the only people that can do certain things. Because if he didn't have ADHD, maybe he would not have taken that kind of risk helping all those people and putting his life really on the verge of death at any moment.
Well, you know, there's an Israeli, he's deceased now, I believe, an Israeli Supreme Court justice. His name was Moshe Beisky. And Moshe Beisky said, he was a Schindler survivor, and he said, Schindler was a drunkard. Schindler was a woman man, a womanizer. He was not normal in any way. If he had been normal, he would not have done what he did to save us. And I think therein, you know, it encapsulates, you know, another side of ADHD. He had trouble in relationships. He couldn't maintain relationships. He had trouble with substance abuse. Before the war, and especially after the war. During the war, he didn't drink as much because he had intensity. he had the intensity of saving human lives. And so, you know, one of the things that the Schindler Saga points out, first of all, he failed in every business just about before World War II. He failed in every business after World War II. But when he had a combination of factors during World War II, which is he had a sense of mission, you know, rather than just making money, which was never enough to engage his full being, he had a mission. He had a mission to save human life. He had a sense of adventure and intensity. Every single day, he took risks. His life was about taking risks, and that helped him continue keeping focused and keeping his energy up. He also had something that almost all ADHD people need. He had support. He had some of the finest businessmen, Jewish businessmen, in Krakow, and I call these men his ADHD coaches. And he also had a good woman, Emily Schindler, who was also his coach because she really was pivotal in the story as well. So what I really say in the book, Tippy, is that if ADHD people find a mission, if they find a way to build in little adventures in their lives, if they find support and a network and structure to support them, that they can succeed too. Because without those things, Oskar Schindler, before and after the war, was an abject failure. But with those things, he succeeded in ways that will echo down through human history. I mean, he has a tree planted in Yad Vashem. You know, he's one of the righteous among the nations.
So he basically got high by living on the edge, and then he got a sense of fulfillment by actually helping people stay alive. And that was enough for him not to get drunk until that high was gone and he had to get drunk. I think that's really a great analysis of what he went
through.
I mean,
he did.
But you mentioned.
He did drink during the war, but just not nearly as much.
So you mentioned a pretty famous person, Moshe. Was he a judge in Israel?
Yeah, Moshe Beisky was a Supreme Court judge.
What's his name? Moshe what?
Moshe Beisky, B-E-J-S-K-I.
Okay, Moshe Beisky I guess he's a famous Schindler survivor. Are there any other famous survivors?
Well, one of my favorites is the son of Schindler survivors. His name is Dr. Joseph Biederman. And Dr. Joseph Biederman, who's the head of psychiatry at Massachusetts General Hospital, one of the great warriors in the fight to have ADHD recognized as a legitimate mental health challenge. His parents were both Schindler survivors.
Mm-hmm.
And he met Oskar Schindler when he was a boy because he was born in Argentina, where, as you know, a lot of Jewish people settled after the war, and certainly a lot of Germans did too. That's where they got Adolf Eichmann. But he grew up with Oskar Schindler. And, you know, Dr. Biederman, he doesn't like to say that there's anything good about ADHD. He focuses largely on the challenges, and I respect him for that because somebody's got to do it. And when I suggested to him that Oskar Schindler had ADHD, he struggled to wrap his mind around that. And I'm not going to put words into his mouth, but I think I made some headway with my case. I went to Massachusetts General Hospital specifically to meet with him because I was so enthralled that one of the world's great experts, he is the top. I mean, he's got his name on hundreds of scientific articles and studies. He's the descendant of Schindler survivors. So without Oskar Schindler,
wow,
we wouldn't have one of the great experts in ADHD. That, you know, the poetry that just right, enthralls me.
Wow, that's pretty amazing. Yeah, because you just save one life and you don't know where that's going to take you. You don't know what the descendants are going to be from that life. Amazing, amazing.
Well, there's a company called HomeMedics, and HomeMedics is a very large.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, the guys, I believe the guy that started is Fred Ferber, and Fred is not a Schindler survivor, but his sister, Renya, is a Schindler survivor, and I actually quote her in the book. So, you know, there are some big movers and shakers who were on Schindler's list, you know, who went on to do great things. So,
amazing.
You know, a lot of stories abound.
Yeah, amazing. So one of the things that you like to do, from what I understand, is to visit Schindler's Factory. How did that feel? And what do you do? And how did you feel when you first went there?
Well, you know, I'm a kinesthetic learner. I learn by using my body, by being physically active. And so I experience things in a very visceral and a very physical way. And when I got to the entrance of Schindler's Factory, and you know, it's you have a small part of it that's still there, but nevertheless, when I got there, my whole body was alight. You know, I felt this intensity, this poignancy throughout my whole body, and you know, it was as if I had arrived somewhere that I was always meant to visit. And, you know, but even more than that, the thing that electrified me even more was I've taken groups of people to Poland, and mostly ADHD teenagers and young adults, I basically to visit Oskar Schindler's Factory and to visit Auschwitz and all these places of the Holocaust. And my message when I do these trips is Oskar Schindler resisted. Oskar Schindler stood up to tyranny. Oskar Schindler lied when he was in grade school because he got caught at doing so much stuff that they didn't like. He was a liar. But he turned that around, and he became a manipulative genius of the Nazis, one of the few people who really masterfully manipulated the Nazis, and he was one of the few people who beat the Nazis at their own game. And these are the stories that I tell the kids when I take them to Schindler's Factory, when I take them to Krakow, Poland. And I want to tell you something. One of the greatest lies that Oskar Schindler ever told was that he convinced the SS that he was a true believing Nazi. And he may, even though some of them doubted him because he was arrested several times by the Gestapo, he maintained that lie through the whole war. He maintained that lie so potently that when Amon Göth, the brutal beast who was in charge of the Płaszów work camp, when he was arrested, he asked his attorney to contact Oskar Schindler because he was sure that Oskar Schindler would be willing to be a character witness for him. That is how deep the deception, the manipulation, the mastery of manipulation went, that this Nazi brute, Amon Göth, who's much more horrible than you see in Schindler's, much more horrible than you see in Schindler's List, he thought Schindler was his best friend.
Wow.
So those are the stories that I tell because I'm always trying to get ADHD young people to flip their consciousness, just like you're trying to do on this show, to flip their consciousness around ADHD and see how with the right intention and the right persistence and the right support, you can flip it. And you can do powerful things in this world, and you can change this world for the better.
That's powerful, and I love your passion. I can definitely tell you passion. One of the things that you said is that you feel with your body, and I could totally relate to that because when I hear something that touches my soul, something that's like meaningful, I get goosebumps all over. And it kind of tells me that there's some kind of truth, there's some kind of important thing there that I need to take that further. And I'm not an ADHD, but I could still, I'm more like an empath. So I can still feel things, like my body reacts, and I can feel that, I can sense that. So I totally relate to you. I totally understand what you're saying. And so when you say, I think this is a really exceptional thing that you say. I love it. So I think it means a lot more than just reading it. You say training your dragon. I love that.
Oh, wow.
Because I've been using training your elephant, but can you tell me what exactly, can you explain that? Because I think I understand it, but I don't think everybody will.
Well, it's the same idea that I just expounded upon. And the idea is that ADHD can be like a dragon. It can be this destructive force, and any school teacher can vouch for me on this. It can be this destructive force. And it certainly was a destructive force in Oskar Schindler's life in many respects. But when you find a way to train those powers, you can use those powers as a force of good. The reason I use dragon, and because what you're referring to is a kids camp that I did, and it's still going on. I'm not involved with that anymore. Somebody else is doing that, but I started that. And the idea was that we were going to use that metaphor to help young, and this was a boys camp, young boys with ADHD to begin to understand their own power and that there were steps that they could take to use their power for good things and to get them what they wanted in their lives. So that's the whole idea. And, you know, of course, training the dragon, I mean, it's in terms of a metaphor, it goes back to King Arthur, because Merlin was the sort of mystical power that Merlin talked about was the dragon. And he was helping King Arthur tame the dragon and use the power of the dragon to help his people. Mm-hmm. So it goes way back there. So that's the essence of it.
Yeah, I love it. I'm going to steal this from you. I'm definitely going to use it in my training, because I talk about taming your elephant, which is great metaphor, but taming your dragon is like so much better. Totally love it.
Well, so. And incidentally, I happen to love elephants, and when I watch the nature shows of elephants and when I visit zoos where there's elephants, I get that visceral response, like these are creatures I want to hang out with. And, you know, these are creatures that make my heart fill with love. So I don't know what it is, but there's something mystical for me with elephants as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So like I said, you're so passionate about it, and I love it. And I think there's some kind of impact on what you do to help people not forget about the Holocaust, which, you know, there's a lot of Holocaust deniers running around. But I'm kind of wondering, and I didn't really know that it existed. You're not Jewish, and you haven't had any of your family members killed. What's that?
Jew in training.
Oh. That's good. I like that. So how do you think that your perspective on Schindler impacts the helps people not to forget about the Holocaust or understand it better, or help kind of deal with the people that are denying it?
Well, I'm not an, you know, anger is not my affect, Tippy. I'm not an angry person, but if people talk to me with these Holocaust denying ideas, I have a really hard time not becoming enraged, and it's something I'm really working on. First of all, you know, yeah,
I don't blame you. I do.
Yeah. I'm not Jewish, but when I was 9 years old, one of my favorite shows, I was a weird kid, I watched BBC's World at War every Friday that year. It was on PBS. And I think it's episode 22 or something was the Holocaust episode. And I watched that episode, and then I watched it again the night before, because they would broadcast it the same episode two nights in a row. And as I watched that episode, there was this man, and I can still see him in my mind's eye. And he was describing being a boy, and he was about my age, in the Warsaw Ghetto. And I remember watching that whole episode. And, of course, for a 9-year-old, you know, that was a lot to take in. But as I watched it, there was something in me that was drawn to learn about the Holocaust and to learn about the dark side of human nature. And when I was 13, as a Catholic, I had to pick a saint who would be my spiritual guide. And the saint that I picked was Maximilian Kolbe. And Maximilian Kolbe happened to be a Jesuit priest who had been imprisoned in Auschwitz. And when there was an escape in 1941, ten men were chosen to die in reprisal for the escape. That was what the Nazis did to deter prisoners from escaping. And one of the men, 12 children or something like that, and he was beside himself with grief that he was going to die and leave his family. And so Maximilian Kolbe raised his hand and said, I'll take his place. And Rudolf Hess, the camp commandant, allowed him to take his place. And so he gave his life for another man. And that was who I chose as my confirmation saint. So this goes back a long time for me. And I don't, look, the Holocaust, you know, it was Jews, it was gays, it was gypsies, it was a lot of people, primarily the Jews. But I think this is an issue for the whole human race. As a human race,
absolutely,
that is an incident that shows the potential for evil in the human heart. But, you know, when I do these trips and when I talk to young people about the Holocaust, I freak. Yes, of course you focus on the horrors. That's the easy part. But the hard part is I focus on the resistance. I focus on the Rudolf Ribba and Wetzler, who escaped from Auschwitz and wrote a report and alerted the world in spring of 1944 what the Nazis were doing in Auschwitz. And I focused on the lady who stole an SS officer's gun in Crematoria II and shot the SS officer and wounded several more. And I focus on Oskar Schindler, and I focus on the Bielski brothers, and I focus on Abba Kovner in the ghetto of Vilnius. So I focus on the people that resisted, and I use that as a way, because I don't want to, you don't want to take a group of teenagers and have them, upset for the whole trip. I mean, you want it to impact them, but I find that there are a lot of examples of resistance. There's a lot of examples of Jewish resistance, and I try to focus on those.
It's true. It's really true, because as a kid, when they told me about the Holocaust, my entire family got wiped out. What really ticked me off was the fact that the Jews didn't do anything to resist, because they never told us any stories about resistance. There was resistance.
That
they were killed off quickly.
But
it really upset me that they were just walking like sheep to the slaughter. It was like, why? Why didn't they do something? Really, really upset me.
Well, there's a documentary I don't know if it's still for sale, but it's called The Partisans of Vilna, and it's about a 2-hour long documentary, and it details Abba Kovner, and he was a Jewish resistance leader, and they harassed the Nazis, and they got a lot of Jews out of the ghetto. And that's one that your listeners may want to get, that I find particularly engaging. I really think that as a culture, we need to focus more on those who resisted, so that we can send the message that, hey, you can stand up to tyranny. You can resist. You can have an impact on your world. And that's the message that I give when I take people over to Poland. So.
Yeah,
but
definitely.
Anyway.
The hero is definitely the one to resist. So we're running out of time, but I just wanted to know, before we run out of time, what's your mission?
My mission is to empower others to share with the world their full, authentic selves.
Others meaning
and
people who have ADHD or in general everybody?
No, anybody, but you can see that the ADHD community is where I've spent a lot of my energy. But it applies to everybody. You know, I think one of the things when we have a mission is it's got to be bigger than we can possibly do in one lifetime. And it's pretty broad. That's my mission. And of course, you can see how that perfectly ties in with the ADHD community. Because so often their authentic, the authentic selves of ADHD people is stunted. And so that's where a lot of the work must be done.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah. That sounds good. So if somebody wants to buy that book, that.
You can simply go to Amazon. It's not going to be officially out until October 15th. However, you can go to Amazon now and you can pre-order it. And all you got to do is, if you put in Schindler's Gift, not Schindler's List, but Schindler's Gift, the book will come right up. And I want to do a shout out to Cindy Baldwin, who designed the cover and did a beautiful job. And I want to do a shout out to my favorite Stein family, John, Lauren, and Noah Stein. And if people want to get a hold of me, Tippy, they can go to KevinJRoberts.net. Don't forget the J, KevinJRoberts.net. And my email, if people want to get a hold of me, is Kevin@KevinJRoberts.net. And I do academic coaching and life coaching. If anybody is interested in that. I also do speaking on the Holocaust, and I also do training for teachers and students in schools.
Do you do coaching for a six-year-old?
I wouldn't do coaching for a six-year-old per se, but what I would do is I would talk to the parents and steer them in the right to the right directions for appropriate resources, and I would coach the family on how to deal with the six-year-old. And I think if you have a, you know, one of the, at the end of every chapter of my book, Schindler's Gift, there's a section that's called Raising Schindler. And so as part of the book, I make recommendations for, hey, if you got a kid that has some traits that Oscar Schindler had as a kid, here's the way you should, here are some productive ways to deal with that kid and ensure that he or she grows up with a sense of power and with an understanding of how his or her brain works.
Oh, that's so great, because you did say that taking the medication in itself is really not enough, that they do need a plan to really
I can't
help
tell you how many times we see – yes, so many times we see kids go on medication and there are some benefits, but really when you have a kid with ADHD, the way you have to parent is different. And so I can't say enough about CHADD, C-H-A-D-D. They have a parent-to-parent program. It's very reasonably priced, and it's a great way at figuring out how to parent your ADHD child. And in the process, if you're going to work on parenting your child with ADHD, you're going to learn a lot about yourself, and you're going to also grow as a person.
So it's called CHADD, C-H-A-D-D.
Yep.
Is it CHADD.com, the website?
I think it's CHADD.org.
CHADD.org. Okay, great. So CHADD.org. And your book is going to be coming out on the 15th. Is it possible
you can order
to get
now.
An autographed copy of your book when it comes out? Because I would love to have one.
Well, you're getting one already. you got your name's on one. So, yeah, you don't have to worry about that. Yeah, if people want,
I want your autograph.
I have to wait till they come, and they're coming any day. But I'm going.
Yeah.
I'm going to London on Friday, and I'm doing a bit of a mini book tour in the United Kingdom on this book because my great friend Andrea Bilbo, who's the president of ADHD Europe, she's put on a bunch of talks for me. So I'm going there on Friday. But so I think it'll probably be a week. But if people really want a signed copy, they can email me and we can work it out that way, and we'll send it off Amazon site. Kevin, K-E-V-I-N, at kevinjroberts.net. Don't forget the J. Kevin at
– don't forget the
Kevin, yeah, kevinjroberts.net. It's not Kevin – because unfortunately you go to com, there's another guy. There's a lot of Kevin Roberts out there.
So many Kevin Roberts. Oh, my God. I just Googled it. There's more than you can count. So it's kevinjroberts.net, not .com.
That is
– remember that.
That is correct.
Okay. We got it. And it's Chad, and we got that too. And that is amazing. So it's been a really pleasure talking to you. You've enlightened me in a lot of different ways, especially about taming my dragon. And before I let you go, I read something about you that you speak 5 languages. Is it because you have ADHD?
You know, the irony is most people with ADHD struggle with foreign language acquisition. I think it's because of this. My father was a mathematician and had a mathematician brain. My mother is a singer and a musician. And I think that in me, both sides came together and produced somebody that hears the musicality of language, but who also has that brain for figuring out the formulas and the patterns of language. I just think I got lucky with a certain combination of my parents' underlying skills, because neither of my parents is particularly gifted at language. So, no, I just think it was something I was born with. I think it's a little bit of an anomaly, to be honest with you. I speak French, German, and Spanish pretty fluently, and then Italian, Greek, and Polish. You know, to one extent, my Greek is really not very good, but my Polish and my Polish and Italian are pretty good. So
really?
I'm learning Polish.
Wow.
I'm and working
French?
On it.
You never tackled
right now.
You never tackled with French. With Polish?
Oh yeah, French. Yeah, I said French. No, French is
my
first foreign language.
Yeah, you did say French, Italian, and Spanish.
Oh, German too. But French is the one that is my first foreign language that I learned, and I love French. I love it deep in my soul, as well as Spanish. So I'm not one of those people who is anti-immigrant. I'm a pro-immigrant person because I think that immigrant people are exactly what made one of the things that made America great. So,
are you pro-illegal immigration or are you pro-legal immigration?
No. I'm pro-legal immigration.
Yeah, I think
and
everybody
pro,
in America is pro-legal immigration.
Yeah, we are, and I'm pro and I'm pro-foreign people coming to America because that's what this country is about. This country is a melting pot, and I hope we never get to the point where we all think of ourselves as purely American, and we forget, you know, the heritage of the people that were our ancestors that came here. So that's where I stand. So anyway, well, listen.
Yeah.
It has been an absolute pleasure being on the show, I feel really privileged, and this has been really exciting, and I feel that you've given me a platform to display my passion, and I'm really grateful for that.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate you coming, and I really appreciate what you're doing, and I'm really looking forward to hearing a lot more from you. Thank you so much.
All right, Tippy. We'll talk real soon.
Yeah, thank you so much. And we've come to the end of our time together here on Tippy Talk. We are looking forward to hearing more about you and hearing more about what you're doing, Kevin. And I'm sure that you're going to be doing a lot of great things. So don't forget, if you want your story, we're here to listen to your story and share your gift. It could be any story. It doesn't have to be super inspirational or special, because we here at Tippy Talk know that your story is special and we want to hear about it. You've been listening to Tippy Talk. My name is Tippy Felsenstein, and I wish you an amazing rest of the week. ¶¶